From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
The regular Senate estimates process gives one of the best opportunities for the opposition to extract information from the government. At these hearings, Senate committees quiz public servants and Senate ministers about a whole range of government administration. In the past, some opposition senators have made their reputations by their hard-nosed forensic questioning in these hearings. One of Labor's present attack dogs in the Senate estimates process is its finance spokeswoman, Katie Gallagher, who, as a former ACT chief minister, has herself had plenty of experience of being bombarded with questions. Gallagher is also chair of the Senate COVID Committee, which hears from a wide range of witnesses about the progress of the COVID response. At Senate Estimates this week, Gallagher was pursuing, in particular, matters to do with Brittany Higgins, including pressing the Secretary of the Prime Minister's Department, Phil Gaitchens, over his still unfinished report into who in Scott Morrison's office knew what and when about Higgins' allegation that she was raped in a minister's office in 2019. Katie Gallagher joins us today, but just briefly because she has to go back into estimates. Katie Gallagher, what did we learn this week about the Brittany Higgins matter that we didn't know before?
Well, I think one of the most important things we've learnt is that not much has changed since the alleged rape back in 2019. We know that DPS hasn't changed any of their policies or practices.
That's the Department of Parliamentary Services.
That's right. They're the people that sort of manage the building and have the security staff that care for the building 24/7 and all the people in it. And we also learnt that the inquiries that were created by the Prime Minister to find out who did what when and who knew what when and what did they do with that information are still unfinished. That's the Gaitchens review. Dr. Kunkel's review was handed down midday yesterday, and we've learnt that basically he couldn't substantiate the question that he was asked to investigate, so it's a more of a nothing to see here. So I think from Brittany Higgins' point of view, I think it's probably been a pretty frustrating week.
So where to from now? What do you think should be done? We know that other inquiries are underway about future actions, but what do you think needs to be done?
Well, I think we need to firstly make sure that there is some transparency and accountability for what went on in this building a couple of years ago and what people in power did with that knowledge. And that means the Gaitchens report should be released and they should be upfront about what that finds. I think the Foster review, which was another review that was done that's been provided to the Prime Minister but not to anybody else, needs to be released. There needs to be some honesty and decency, I think, with how this whole mess has been handled. And I think all I've seen this week in estimates and from the Prime Minister is a hope and desire that it all goes away. I think he gets that Brittany Higgins is a political problem for him, but I would hope that we can deal with it more as a, you know, from around human decency, and I haven't seen much sign of that.
A big strand of this, of course, though, goes to the challenges of extracting information. Now, you're the chair of the COVID committee. Just on that front, how cooperative has the government been in providing information? Have there been roadblocks, and what have these been?
Look, I think we have had over 40 hearings, hundreds of hours of evidence. So I think the government tries to make it look like they are cooperating and providing information. But from where I sit, I think they provide the information they want to provide, and the information they don't want to provide, they don't provide. And so we have had pretty critical information withheld from the committee.
Such as?
Well, all of the modelling and assumptions that went into the economic rescue packages, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars going out the door, all the health advice that's been provided to the government, the decisions that have been taken about border closures, about vaccinations, about why they went with certain companies and not others. You know, the things that I think are fundamental to the heart of the pandemic response, where it gets sensitive, the government has refused to provide that information, and I think that creates a problem for us in properly scrutinising it.
Now, of course, the National Cabinet is being treated like a cabinet, and its deliberations and material are secret. Rex Patrick, an independent senator, is taking action under administrative law to try to break that open so that it wouldn't be treated as a cabinet for those purposes. If he succeeds, how much more information do you think you might be able to extract?
Well, we would be, you know, and I hope it does succeed, because I think National Cabinet is a construct that the Prime Minister uses to keep information from scrutiny. I can't really work out how he's convinced the other state governments that to be a part of it, to be honest, because it's not something I would have agreed to when I was at COAG. But I think a whole range of information has been denied to us on the grounds that it's a National Cabinet document. You know, even presentations by public servants to National Cabinet are considered in cabinet in confidence. So we haven't even, you know, what you can provide to another government isn't even being provided to this parliament. So I think if Rex is successful, the Senate committee would meet pretty quickly and put in a request for all the information that's currently been withheld.
This was, of course, before COVID and before your committee, but was it easier to get information under the old COAG system?
I can't speak so much from what in terms of a Senate committee getting it from Commonwealth government, but I don't feel that the way it operates now is that Scott Morrison is able to control other state and territory government information and whether that becomes public as well. So it has a pretty far and wide-ranging reach, and I think that's of concern both to Rex and to myself. But certainly it's been used as a blanket way of exempting information that previously wouldn't able to have used a cabinet in confidence tag, because it wasn't a cabinet subcommittee before. COAG wasn't a cabinet subcommittee, which essentially is what Scott Morrison is arguing it is now.
Would a Labor government make changes to the parliamentary committee system to make it more effective in circulating information or extracting information?
Well, I like to think a Labor government would not be as secretive and, you know, as this government. You know, I'd like to think people that in a former Labor government have a interest in transparency and accountability. And for me, in my previous roles, I think the more open and honest and accountable you are, the better government you are. Because it's the minute you start hiding stuff and hiding your mistakes or hiding decisions that I think you get into troubled territory. So I would certainly be a strong advocate of making sure that if we were lucky to form government, that we don't apply the same kind of approach that this government does, which is to withhold anything they don't want to release.
And what about reforms to the Freedom of Information Law? Because often the media in particular finds that there's a lot of obstruction there, delays, costs.
Yeah, well, blacking out. I mean, that is more Mark Dreyfus's area, and he's responsible for that policy area. But I've heard him speak about the delays, the cost, and the refusals that are currently applied. It's a frustration, not just for journalists, but for us as well. I mean, I get most of my FOIs declined in the first round. If I come back, I get a charge. If I contest the charge, I might get some of it remediated. But it's all under the hopeful guise that you're not going to pursue it. And that's
so
a problem.
So we could expect reform?
Well, I think ask Mark Dreyfus that question.
Very political answer. Now, before we let you race back to that estimates hearing, let's talk to your portfolio role. If Labor were to get in at the next election, it would inherit a great deal of debt and deficit. Would getting these down be a major focus of a Labor government's budget policy?
Well, I think the focus of our budget policy would be about, jobs and looking after the Australian people. That would be first and foremost. We do think there's a budget repair story that has to come in at some point. I've just been exploring this with Senator Birmingham about when that would be, and we would take appropriate advice on that.
Did you come to a consensus?
No. Well, it's a little unclear what the government's position is now on it. I mean, there's certainly nothing that I can see without significant spending cuts, how they're going to bring the budget back into balance. But, I mean, we've been consistent on debt and deficit. Our position has always been that the government has a role to play to invest in the economy in times of economic shock and to look after the Australian people. We have maintained that position through this pandemic, and it's a position we will maintain in the recovery. It's the government that's been hypocritical on that.
In government, you'd be finance minister, and you'd be the one, the major one, looking for cuts, driving cuts in the budget, what cuts you did want to bring in. Would you be willing to be tough with your colleagues?
Well, I think for me, and I've, you know, been in a position where I've been run a budget much smaller than the federal budget, but I understand how you have to manage one, is it's about where you spend and the quality of the spend. And that for me would be the guiding thing. I am not going to be a finance minister that pretends you don't have to spend anything or that you cut in order to deliver a particular outcome that hurts a lot of people. I don't have that approach, but I do have a very firm and tough view about getting a value for every dollar you spend, particularly when it's borrowed, which it will be for the short term in Australia. And that's the view I would bring to the table. But there's no short of toughness with me.
And just finally, Labor now is obviously crafting its policies for the election. Will they involve some savings as well as spends?
We certainly think there's areas in the government's budget where there's waste, and where there's waste, we will look to reallocate and apply it to our priorities.
And can you name two or three?
Well, any number of those pork barrelling funds that have been established. There's billions of those dollars right across the Ford estimates in that. We don't think it's right to pork barrel your way to an election. And when every dollar spent is a dollar borrowed, we think it should be put so that it's the benefits of it are shared across the Australian community fairly. So we will have more to say about that.
Katie Gallagher, we'll let you get back to that committee. Thank you very much for being with us today. That's all for today's podcast. Thank you to my producer, Tom Glassie. We'll be back with another interview soon. Goodbye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevere. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.